charging a tuppenny for a chair. Actually, that is what Santa Cruz is doing, because if you want to sit legally in many of these areas, street cafes are your only alternative. There are some benches left. Yeah, that's true. But it's the, you know, they're encouraging people to use the street cafe and the street furniture. So it's also charming and gentrified for those who can afford the cafe latte, you know, and the bit of food out on the out on the street to watch all the charming street scene as people pass by and all that sort of thing. But, and that's fine. I've got no problem with merchants having, you know, an involvement and an interactive presence on the street, provided they don't try to monopolize the scene and destroy it for everybody else and turn it into some kind of upscale Third Avenue, Third Street promenade in Santa Monica, where homeless people get trashed regularly and where it's an endurance test to be able to be a homeless person in Santa Monica. Although, I you may have more recent information about this, Jeffrey, but I actually, which this sort of segues me into the next issue, which is Santa Monica's war against the homeless, which is the lead story in this month's Street Spirit, which you can catch at your local library, at least if you're near the Central Library downtown, or you can pick up from a local vendor on the street. If you give them a buck or her a buck, she'll be able to go in out of the cold. Maybe she'll be able to buy some sanitary napkins or some of those other things that, you know, I know she's likely to drink it all down or shoot it in her arm, right? But there are other things people need than booze and drugs, and there are other things they use money for. Not that they don't use money for those things, too. And that, in fact, brings us back to a controversy up in San Francisco regarding Proposition N, which I don't think I'm going to have time to really get into at any length. The courts threw out part of Proposition N earlier this month, or earlier this week, actually.
But did you see what the man who wants to be the next mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, said? And it could directly affect 1,600 homeless human beings right now who are all seniors and disabled if he gets his way. He said that the court ruling left out that little situation. And bottom line, you know, those people who are on disability, if you take them off disability, they're just going to jump right back to the so-called workfare welfare office to get money. It's disgraceful that someone like Newsom can think of running for mayor of San Francisco.
We have to explain what the issue is before I think people can understand what's going on. But, yeah, Proposition N, of course, was Newsom's bash the homeless proposition, which he couldn't get by the supervisors for a number of reasons, because the supervisors are more liberal, and instead he took it directly to the voters and used a massive ad campaign, various false statements, false testimonials, too. He quoted people who later retracted their support for that.
But he did it all with the backing of the mayor of San Francisco, Willie Brown, who went on national television and said that he is in favor of Newsom being the next mayor. Mayor Brown, as you well know, Robert, ran against the former police chief and mayor of San Francisco, Frank Jordan, and the main issue in the Mayor Brown's original campaign was that the Matrix plan failed under Jordan, and that if you elect Willie Brown, mayor of San Francisco, for the first time, he will finally humanely deal with the homeless situation and the food, not bombs people.
I remember.
And Willie Brown, in my opinion, has been the worst mayor I've ever seen in San Francisco.
Actually, I went to jail under Willie Brown for a month because he, Food Not Bombs injunction, the injunction that bars Food Not Bombs from feeding, they took me to trial on it. They convicted me of feeding rice and, salad to people at Civic Center Plaza in front of the mayor's office. And a jury found me guilty of violating this injunction, even though the injunction itself was bogus. And the injunction is still in effect, by the way, in San Francisco. It's simply ignored twice a day, every day, by Food Not Bombs, which says, we don't care about any stinking injunction. We're feeding people. And Brown, I suppose you would say to his credit, has generally both ignored the injunction and apparently pressured the police or told the police not to go after people who are eating. However, of course, as you have pointed out, and as I found out when I was in jail, and I was writing little, you know, directives and press statements and, you know, making statements on the radio, you can actually phone out of jail collect if you can get into a radio station, that Brown's attacks on homeless people stepped up from Jordan. There were twice as many homeless people ticketed and arrested for sleeping in the parks. Brown intensified the crackdown on the poor and homeless, other than the food not bombs situation, so it was pretty grim.
And the most honorable person running for mayor, who really should have won last time, but because of collusion between the mayor and the two San Francisco dailies, the president of the Board of Supervisors, Tom Amiano, has done more to try to fight for the rights of the homeless in San Francisco, and he is the one, by far, who should be the next mayor of San Francisco, California.
There's also... Well, we got a bunch of issues here. I was about to read about Santa Monica, Proposition N in San Francisco, overturned by a judge. The judge, maybe I should read just a just sort of an intro into that. I'm assaulted with a mass of issues. It's always the way. And indeed, before I even leave the planter issue here in Santa Cruz, I want to say something about that. Sherry Connable, I want to tip my hat to her, an activist who I have disagreed with numerous times in the past, and we've had strong differences. Has tried to do some very, she's tried to be effective in opposing the removal of the benches and demanding the return of the benches, in getting city commissions to weigh in on this, and she went to the Citizens Police Review Board before Emily Riley destroyed it. And I say Riley because she was the mayor who okayed this behind-the-scenes process, didn't speak out about it. We heard promises that there was going to be a new process to establish whatever the next system would be, the city auditor process. And all those meetings, I talked to Assistant City Manager Martine Bernal, were held in secret. There are no minutes for those meetings. There are no agendas for those meetings. They weren't public meetings. They should have been public meetings because they were a subcommittee of the City Council, even though it was an ad hoc subcommittee. So we have Sherry Connable, who stepped forward and who got selective enforcement as a policy denounced by the Citizens Police Review Board in a resolution that was sent to City Council but never got there because Riley violated the rules of City Council in essence, in spirit, and didn't put the issue on the City Council agenda. She's required to either put it on the agenda or send it back to the commission with a note. Instead, she abolished the commission. Thank you very much. Parks and Rec requested a complete accounting for the benches from their staff. And that's always what the situation is. The City Council's commissions, to some extent, although they're appointed by council and to some extent subservient bodies, they are, in theory and in some cases in practice, the public's voice and eye on city government. And what the city has done recently is cut back on the number of times these bodies are going to be able to meet, cut back on their staff, all the while pleading budget poverty. We aren't cutting back on the hosts. We aren't cutting back on the police. We aren't cutting back on enforcement of bogus behavioral laws that criminalize the poor. No, we're cutting back on the commissions that allow the public to oversee what's really going on at City Council, at least in theory. Much of the time, these commissions don't do that, but they have the potentiality to do that, and that's what makes Chief Belcher so nervous as he receives new honors. And for the first time that I've ever seen, I saw him drawn into a critical dialogue in November. I think that the tape I made of that dialogue, which happened at the Citizens Police Review Board, may be a classic archive, because I don't think you're going to see Belcher called on the carpet again, even though he refuses to have a policy, to publish a policy about his officers in terms of the display and use of force. Right now, the policy apparently is you can threaten somebody all you want. You can harass them all you want. Police don't have to write up an incident even when they draw their weapon unless there's an arrest made. Well, what's that all about, folks? The CPRB, for a year and a half, tried to get that change, tried to get involved in the process, and they were unable to do it. Instead, of course, they were disbanded. And all you heard, of course, on the open mic was that there are economic reasons why they're eliminating the CPRB, to get rid of the $80,000 cost of the body. Instead, they're setting up paying a $40,000 lawyer, Bob Aronson, the out-of-town Palo Alto attorney who was counsel for the CPRB, Supposedly he now handles all these complaints. It's a sad situation, and we have Jeffrey Gale to do a little crying about it for us.
Yeah, in the meantime, shifting gears, at 1010 Pacific Avenue, I've noticed, Robert, there are more pickets than ever before dealing with all of the collusion that went on with huge construction project there. And what's funny is all the pickets are right in that parking lot in front of that new Chinese buffet restaurant that's owned by someone in Modesto, but it's actually a very fine restaurant. People shouldn't misinterpret.
You can eat sushi.
Right, but the bottom line is that, to me, this is one of the biggest scandals I've seen since I got back here December 1st, in that we have this huge multi-million-dollar project on the main street and on the Pacific Avenue Garden Mall there, and the people that are putting the project together are not doing it in a safe manner. They're being hired from God knows where, Vancouver, I don't know where, and I want to see the city council do something about it.
It was actually on the agenda, and I think they had some resolution, which I made copies of, but I haven't yet been able to get any kind of input from. I guess we had someone on the show talking about that who called in, or actually came in, one of the iron workers, I believe. So maybe you, Jeffrey, can track down what their analysis is of what the City Council did at the Tuesday meeting. I think they called for some sort of study on the issue, or they presented some stats on whether prevailing wages were being done at which projects in the city and so forth. So that, maybe we'll have something on that on Sunday. No promises, but that could be happening. Again, as I said, I was running through a kind of a rant praising Sherry Connable's actions, taking issues of benches to the Parks and Rec Commission, taking issues of selective enforcement to the Citizens Police Review Board, and when that board was killed, to the Downtown Commission. We also had a Huff member who attended the Transportation Commission meeting last night, and I don't know if Bernard is listening in. If he is, I encourage him to call in, maybe give a report. The Transportation Commission was the commission which was the last stop for the no homeless vehicles at night, thank you very much, permit parking citywide, but specifically in the downtown area, that apparently has rammed its way through the downtown commission 6-1 after passing the city council unanimously, in spite of the fact that they had no social service input whatsoever from any of their social service providers about the impact this would have on homeless people, to have a set of rules that allows administrative bodies to decide. And I think it's administrative bodies. I got to be, again, I'm still trying to get the whole thing clear in my mind, but essentially that allows a process by which if you park a vehicle at night, even in a metered zone where the meters don't apply, even in one of the free city parking lots after hours, that's going to be the basis for a ticket, unless you have a permit. And it's going to be more expensive for people who are out of town, who do not have a resident address here, to get a permit. And it's not bad enough that they have to arrest you for sleeping in your vehicle or engaging in essential life-performing functions in your vehicle, which is a violation of the Constitution, because it's what's called the necessity. But now they can arrest you for just leaving your vehicle there while you go sleep in a friend's house or hide in the bushes somewhere. You are going to find your home towed out from under you, which is what happened, of course, to this man who just called in, Yun, who has now been fighting to get the city, which apparently doesn't respect the vehicle towing process either. He's got an interesting series of legal analyses on that issue, how his vehicle was towed illegally, and he's got advice for people who find themselves in that situation. I remind people, June 10th at 5:30 on the second floor of the library, there will be a Huff legal forum on fighting your infraction ticket, which you might be interested in. If you want to help contribute to the planning of that forum, you can come to a Huff meeting next Wednesday. That's almost a week from today, 8:30 in the morning at Baker Square Restaurant. So this whole process is happening behind the scenes, this whole process of walling off the planter moving the fence out. We knew it was coming. I mean, I thought, first of all, this is paranoia. They're telling me that somebody told me this 6 months ago, that they saw city officials walking around planning to do this. I said, are you sure? And then I heard it from somebody else and said, well, and I went and I asked Martine Bernal, and I think I asked Riley, and there was, oh, no, we know nothing about this. And here we are. No public process, no public hearing, Dan White unveils this proposal in yesterday's Sentinel.
Right, and as we all know, tourism is the number one industry in Santa Cruz, California, and with the Memorial Day weekend coming starting May 23rd, it's going to make it even more difficult for the homeless because the metropolitan bus system, there are severe cutbacks. As you know, Robert, the Armory was closed April 15th, and the bottom line is, you know, you've got about 14,000 homeless in Santa Cruz County, and who knows, 3,000 or 4,000, at least here in the city of Santa Cruz. It's incredible. Where are these people going to be able to put their head down and get a good night's sleep if they're not allowed to sleep in their vehicles? I mean, this has become a police state. Yesterday, I was in the post office in Capitola. Just before it closed at 4:30, there were two employees to wait on 25 people. One of them said, "Mr. Gale, please fill out a form and give it to my postmaster because we desperately want to hire more people. We're in crisis. This is the worst economy we've had since Herbert Hoover was president, yet we're spending all of this money on the police department harassing a few people on the Pacific Avenue Garden Mall and not allowing people to sleep in their vehicles." But Sheriff Tracy did tell me several weeks ago that if someone is in a van way up in the Santa Cruz Mountains or somewhere, and it's not in a conspicuous place, that manpower has been cut back to the sheriff's department, so we'll leave those people alone. I said, "Sheriff, what about can you walk down the street without any ID in Aptos, certain towns?" He said, basically there's no law in California that you have to carry a picture ID, but I know people that are harassed for just walking down the street in Aptos Village, SoCal. It's profiling, I don't want to call it racial profiling, it's profiling homeless people, and as long as one person is homeless in this county, we're all homeless.
Well, it's also a racial profiling, and that's, you get somebody like DiCenzo, who does this incredibly bigoted cartoon attacking the homeless. One week, it's interesting, if you look at the Metro Santa Cruz, he has a homeless libraries, and he has all these homeless people, they're bums, and they're sleeping, and their dirty feet are up on the, you know, these are obviously people who don't know how to use a library. And then, of course, there's a book, How to Ruin a Mall, by Robert Norris. I'm the only person that gets mentioned by name in there. I suppose I should be happy about that. And then next week, you have DiCenzo doing a cartoon, which goes through how to avoid racial profiling in Santa Cruz by talking white. And it's kind of funny, and because obviously he acknowledges there's problems like that. I want to point out that coming up this weekend, there is a counter conference protesting psychiatry as psychiatry goes mainstream. This is a protest of the American Psychiatric Association annual meeting to be held in San Francisco. This free event challenges mental health system in California and probably across the United States on Saturday, May 17th and Sunday, May 18th, 2003. Organizers are launching a cyber campaign to protest psychiatric abuse. And here's the alert. I'm going to read it. San Francisco, where when 19,000 participants arrive next weekend for the huge American Psychiatric Association annual meeting, hundreds are expected to peacefully protest at a free counterconference on Saturday, May 17th, and a freedom rally on Sunday, May 18th, and the public is invited. Two free events are drawing together a wide diversity of disability, youth, anti-globalization, and homeless activists, plus legal advocates, family members, holistic health practitioners, dissident mental health workers, and more. The protesters' stated goal, a peaceful revolution of empowerment and self-determination. A source of much of this ferment is a 33-year-old social change movement that is uniting more and more of psychiatry's own clients, mental health consumers, and people who say they experienced human rights violations in the mental health system, also known as psychiatric survivors. "First, psychiatry came for us," said one survivor, "but now psychiatry is coming after the public, and we're the ones who know what to do." Psychiatry targeting the public? Throughout the Bay Area, organizers have put up posters with four facts to back up their claim that psychiatry is now targeting the general public. Fact one, from 1990 to 2000, the sale of antidepressant drugs increased 800%. Fact 2, children from the ages of 2 to 4 are now given psychiatric drugs only approved by the FDA for ages 6 and up. Fact 3, in the state of California, a person may now be court-ordered to take psychiatric drugs against their will in their own home. That's SB 1421, folks, the one I was warning you about last year. Fact 4, a key Bush administration mental health advisor, psychiatrist Sally Satel, is campaigning for more forced psychiatric drugging nationally. We've got the Freedom Forum and Festival on Saturday, May 17th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Everett Middle School, 450 Church Street, San Francisco. Again, that's 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, May 17th, Everett Middle School, 450 Church Street, San Francisco. Then there's a Freedom Rally on Sunday, 1 p.m. at the Moscone Center. That's at 747 Howard Street, San Francisco, directly outside the opening of the APA annual meeting. All events, again, free. How you can participate in a free, peaceful cyber protest of psychiatry from anywhere in the world, and the way to do that is to email me, rnorse@hotmail.com, rnorse@hotmail.com, and I'll forward that to you, or you can actually directly get it probably by going to, probably go under Google, do a search for psychiatry protest. Jeffrey?
And also, of course, May 10th to May 17th is Ride Your Bike Week here in Santa Cruz, and today the idea was not to go to your job or to school in an automobile. There was a free breakfast, and, you know, it sounds like tokenism. I would hope that, like in Amstelveen and various places that I've been, that people would stop driving their cars to work every minute, buying gasoline, so we have to make more war in the Middle East to get more oil. But, Robert, you know, that thing that you mentioned about the APA, the most astounding story that I saw this week, it's a precedent-setting story in the state of California.
Hang on, before you got the story, we got the phone call. Got to go for that first. Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
A little tired.
No, you got to give up that smoking immediately. What can I tell you? Yeah.
A little better now.
Yes.
End of a long day for you, I suppose.
Oh, dear, this must be a long-distance call.
Excuse me?
I don't know. Well, caller, what can we do for you?
I don't know. I just thought I'd call in and find out...
We can tell you whatever you want to know, caller, but you only have about 7 minutes because...
I realize that you're coming to the end of another long and no doubt successful...
I hope so. How are things...
I just caught that you were talking about some conference in San Francisco.
Yes, we expect you to fly in. I should say come on down for the conference.
Mm. Well, I must admit that... I have a slight pain in the foie, but other than that...
Well, you know what they say, Bush gives us all a pain in the yuck-yuck.
Yeah, well, over here, too, my.
Over here? Where exactly is that, caller?
Well, don't tell. Where would I... My memories are a little weak.
I see.
I associate Robespierre with France. Maybe France.
No, we don't say France. We say freedom in this country. I'm sorry. There is no France
right,
anymore.
The land of freedom, or the land that...
Freedom land, yeah.
...has gotten its ass kicked... by some other country. The name escapes me, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I send you greetings, and keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, caller, and if at any point you wish to actually give an on-the-spot report from how things are going where you are, we'd love to hear it.
Well, things are a little difficult over here. We're not too happy with W.
Georgia W?
Yeah.
Well, that's because you're probably part of the Axis of Evil, sir.
Indeed.
Yes, yes.
So, a kind farewell.
Thank you for calling in.
Yes, indeed.
All right. And that, Jeffrey, is a caller from overseas.
Yes, you can see this worldwide internet. We get calls from everywhere in this show. But the most astounding case came to my attention this week, and the headline is...
And again, we cut you off for another phone call. Yes, hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Jane from Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective.
You've just heard us do that.
If anybody wants to go to the San Francisco rally,
right?
This weekend.
Did you hear us advertising it, Jane?
Right.
Yeah.
They can call me because I'm trying to arrange transportation.
Cool.
especially needed are people who might be able to drive.
Okay.
But anyone wishing to go can give me a call at 475-7904.
475-7904.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Jane, and we'll have them call you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And again, the number to go up to the Shrink the Shrinks rally, make them shrink back, is 475-7904, particularly if you're a driver.
Well, the thing that I was talking about, Robert, definitely could make you a psychiatric basket case, because the headline in this story, it's an Associated Press story, the headline says, former Atherton, California manager faces criminal charges, Atherton being one of the wealthiest towns in the United States. Dateline Ukiah, Associated Press. In a case that could test the legal definition of a hostile work environment, a Mendocino County department head faces criminal charges for allegedly verbally abusing county workers. Ralph Friedman, the county's director of child support services and former interim city manager in Atherton, California, right near Stanford in Palo Alto, faces misdemeanor charges of disturbing the peace. District Attorney Norman Vroman said yesterday, that was earlier this week, that he decided to file the charges after the county failed to respond to two written complaints from two employees. Ann Fuller, a computer services manager and 22-year-old county worker, said that Friedman became so angry during an encounter April 8th in his office that she feared he was going to attack her. Quote, I'm a manager too, but this kind of behavior is just not right, unquote, she said. Richard Wismer, who handles computer services in the Child Services Department, also complained about Friedman's allegedly abusive conduct. Wismer told investigators for the district attorney's office that he was verbally accosted during the same incident involving Fuller. The criminal case against Friedman may be the first in the state of California to address whether a boss who allegedly bullies workers can be held criminally accountable. Friedman issued a statement describing the workers' complaint as, quote, baseless, period, unquote. He said they were the acts of a, quote, disgruntled employee and his cohort, who is a good friend with the district attorney, unquote. Friedman served in Atherton, California, after city manager Dan Galuzzi was forced out in 1999. So everyone out there in listener land, let's be real civilized if you're a boss, and stop using a tactic like berating your employees verbally, because you could face criminal charges and go directly to jail.
And that's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides and all you jail lovers out there. Back on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. In the meantime, you might want to give Jane a call if you want to go up to the psych conference. Call me for the number, 423-HUFF. I'll give it to you. I'm going to go out on a little bit of Rich Little, as From the Cream to the Dregs sets up. 3 hours of high-fidelity music, unlike our scratchy stuff on this show, with Uncle Dennis. So stay with him. Stay with him for the next 3 hours, or as much of it as you'd like to, and give me a call on the Huff line if you got stuff to report, or go on the Indie Media and write your own account, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. Thanks for being with us, and thank you, Jeffrey.
Thank you. Good night. And everyone, watch the full moon eclipse between 8 and 9 here in Santa Cruz, California tonight.
A kind of movie that's always been a big favorite of mine is the spy movie, or 97 Minutes of Total Confusion. You always find a bunch of really super English actors in these films, and what the audience has to try and keep straight is who's doing what to whom and why. Let's listen to a secret briefing session in which Richard Burton is getting instructions from Trevor Howard, Rex Harrison, Jack Hawkins.
Do we have to go over it all again, gentlemen?
Yes, I'm afraid so, 006. The safety of everything east of the Suez and west of the sun depends upon your mission.
But I'm drunk. And I don't like the pension plan.
But think how history will be changed by what you do.
The only thing I would like to change around here is perhaps my underwear.
Take BOAC Flight 37 to Istanbul. Go to the fountain in Ataturk Square at noon Tuesday and look for the blind man feeding pigeons. See if he's carrying a copy of the West Berlin Shopper's Guide dated November the 16th. Ask him, has the breeze stirred the leaves on the slopes of the Pyrenees?
Now, just a moment. Shouldn't that be, does Sam have the best ham in Rotterdam?
No. That's what he asked the bald-headed man in the purple hat with the three-legged cat carrying a copy of the Copenhagen Courier dated October the 20th in the Plaza San Marco.
Oh, I stand corrected. Let me write some of this down. It's a waste of time. You'll only have to swallow it. But that's only if I get caught. No, because someone in this very room may be a notorious double agent. All right. Go over that part again about the blonde...